From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
When I need a shot of invigoration, and who doesn't at mid-season with the heat and the weeds and the dragging around of hoses and all of it, one of the people I like to call is Joseph Tokanovich. Joseph is author of Plant Breeding for the Home Gardener, an inspiring book that will get you looking around your yard with a new eye for its genetic potential. He was named by Organic Gardening Magazine as one of 6 young horticulturists who are helping to shape how America gardens. Joseph's next book on rock gardening is due out later this year. Now, regular listeners will remember our winter conversation about shopping the seed catalogs when, with his Joseph-style enthusiasm, he got us all madly poring over his list of unusual sources, and he confessed to such addictions as dwarf tomatoes and zinnias. Well, what he didn't confess to then is that he's got just a few billion pepper plants out back, too, and oh, then there's the addiction to gladiolus. And he failed to tell us about his recently self-published book of very funny illustrations about, guess what, the state of garden obsession, when gardeners find themselves powerless over plants, plants, and more plants. So let's dig in and get a dose of Joseph energy. Welcome back to A Way to Garden. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Yes. Are you perky? You better be perky.
I'm very perky. Yes. We just got a downpour of rain, so I'm very happy right now.
Oh, good. We haven't had any in about 300 years. Yeah. So before you wriggle out a full disclosure again, I'm not even going to give you a minute, but how many peppers? How many plants out there?
I think it's 280 this year.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. Plants or varieties?
No, 280 plants, yes, okay. Individual plants. And most of those, because I love to breed plants, most of those are my hybrid populations. So they're all a little bit different, though they're not actually varieties. They're
okay.
Various hybrids of crazy things.
Okay. So I was fascinated to learn that you have sort of a whole way of growing them. You know, you've gotten really good at this, and you have some gear that you use and so forth. Tell us about how to grow a great pepper the Joseph way.
Yeah, so I love peppers, and I've grown them for years. And as in a cool climate like mine and yours, especially like big bell peppers, I never got very good yield off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was visiting, this was several years ago when I was in grad school, I saw somebody who was doing research at Michigan State on peppers, and they had a black plastic mulch, just like a sheet of black plastic, and put down over the field, and they're planting in that. And I'd seen that before, but there they had some that were planted in the black plastic and some just in the soil. And the ones on the black were literally twice the size of the ones in the soil. And that really got me thinking and looked at the research, and it dramatically increases the rate of growth and the size of the plants, how early they are, the amount of yield you get, because that black plastic absorbs the heat of the sun, warms up those plants, and really gives them that kick of vigor that they need to grow, especially in a cool northern summer. So I knew that worked, but I didn't want to do that at first because I didn't like the idea of having big sheets of black plastic in my garden that I would have to tear out and throw away every year.
Garbage, yeah.
Right. But a few years ago, I found it at Johnny's Selected Seeds, so I think you can get it elsewhere. It's a biodegradable black plastic mulch that's made from cornstarch, I think. So in the spring, I take my bed, I roll out the black plastic, you bury the edges so it stays firm, you know, stays in place, doesn't blow away, then just cut holes in it to plant the peppers in. They grow like crazy through the summer. I get much better yields. And then in the fall, I just put a layer of mulch over that, you know, the remaining black plastic. Over the winter, it completely biodegrades, breaks down, and, you know, I don't have any trash to deal with in the spring.
Oh, wow. And how wide is this stuff? Like, just so I can visualize what I'm getting.
It's about, I want to say it's like maybe two and a half, 3 feet wide.
Okay.
So I put it down. You have to bury the edges so you lose a little bit of that. Then I do a 2 rows of plants down the plastic so I can come at them from either side.
Okay.
And it comes on a big, long roll. So I do it in, you know, big, long rows of it because I'm growing by the hundreds. But, yeah, and it's relatively you know, you get a big roll. I can't remember. It's relatively inexpensive, and it lasts a long time. You know, you get a big roll, you know, can use it for several years. And it really has made a big difference in how many. I do peppers, eggplants, tomatoes, melons, you know, all those summer heat-loving things really love that extra boost from the black plastic.
Okay. So this is a better black plastic. And it's not really plastic.
Yeah, I mean it's not a petroleum-based product, and it biodegrades, so you're not like you're not destroying the environment while you get your extra peppers.
Right. So you said that the peppers, these 280, is that correct? 280.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
that a lot of them are sort of children of crosses you've made and whatever. So they're not necessarily ones I'm going to see in the catalog. But if I'm where did you begin? Like, what were your favorites that you used as the beginning of this kind of mad scientist breeding program in the backyard?
So yeah, I've grown a lot of different ones trying to find you know, my favorites, the best yielding. One thing I love, you know, like big bell peppers, which I find most of them don't give very good yield in a northern, you know, short season garden. But the best one that I've grown so far is one called Flavor Burst, which is it's you know, can harvest it green and it turns yellow when it's, you know, it's a yellow when it's ripe. And it's I don't notice that the flavor is particularly different. That's what it's marketed as being super flavorful. I find it, you know, I mean, it's good, but not distinctive to my tongue, but it's definitely a good high yielding bell pepper for me. And then a close second would one be called Ace, A-C-E, that yields quite well as well. And then for hot peppers, my favorite I think is one called Ahi Crystal, which is a really wonderful. It's not too hot. I don't like a really like habanero hot pepper because then I feel like I can't taste the pepper. It just is. It's just hot.
Right.
But this one is, you know, it's got some heat, and it's actually a different species than most of the other peppers. It's Bacatum, and it has like a citrusy flavor to it. It's like a tartness that is, I think, is really, really delicious. And it yields and grows like crazy. It's one of the most vigorous, high-yielding peppers that I've grown.
Oh, and so it's Ahi, A-J-I, or... Ahi Crystal. I've never grown it. Okay, interesting. What do the peppers look like? Like, how about how big?
It's they're maybe 2 to 3 inches long, you know, carrot shaped, and they're sort of a light green when they're immature, and then they eventually ripen to red. And I like them actually at either stage. The flavor is a little different, you know, like most peppers. It's a little sweeter when it's fully red ripe and also a little hotter. So I actually like them at the, you know, the immature, you know, light green stage. I think that, you know, the heat is a little less and the flavor is still really nice.
So I've never, you know, I could get out your book, Plant Breeding for the Home Gardener, and I could look up and see if it tells me how to breed a pepper if I had some peppers. Tell me, how does it work? Like, what happened before all these 280... plants. What the heck, and what's going to go on next, and like, when does that happen? Obviously it's when they're flowering. You're going to do something. How are you controlling all this in your experiment out there?
Yeah, so I got inspired because I was reading, as I do in the winter, obscure research papers, and someone had characterized all the chemical compounds in habanero peppers, and it turns out they have all these flavor compounds that are in common with all kinds of fruits and stuff. Lots more diversity of flavor chemicals in them than, you know, your regular bell peppers. But they're so hot that I feel like I can't taste, you know, all those interesting flavors. So I wanted to see if I could. So that wanted pricing a habanero with a sweet bell pepper and see if I could get, you know, some of that interesting flavor from the habanero into something that was not so hot, so I can actually taste it. So that's what inspired me.
I see. Okay. And
so then to do that, you simply grow both the plants and then take the pollen, you know, when they start flowering, you take the pollen from one flower and put it onto the other flower. And then that will develop into a pepper, and the seeds inside of that are going to be the hybrid between your two parents.
So when you say take, what's the vehicle that we're taking it with? Like, what are we doing, paintbrushes or Q-tips, or what are we doing?
I just grab a pair of tweezers and grab the actual anther. So you know there's going to be the ring of petals, and then there's the ring of anthers, which is the male part of the flower, and the center is the stigma, which is the female part. So I just grab that the anther, which is the male part, has the pollen, off with my tweezers, smash it open to get the pollen out, and smear that onto the stigma of the other parent.
Oh, this is a violent thing you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
My
you think
goodness.
It's, you know, it's not. I'm not seducing them into having sex and making babies.
Doesn't sound very romantic, Joseph. Jeez.
No, just getting it done.
Okay, all right. Okay, so you're manually cross pollinating them. Then you're deciding to join these two, the genetics of these two different plants, because you want to get this complexity of flavor that the hot one has, but it has too much heat to taste. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the plan, is to combine the traits of the two. When you hybridize them, you're shaking up their genes and their attributes into new combinations.
Right.
Yeah.
But you could you could get a lot of different. You could get various sizes of fruit, because one has a smaller fruit and one has a bigger fruit, right? One parent.
Yeah. You get all kinds of different sizes and shapes of like the plants that come next week. One like 6 inches tall, the other one's almost 3 feet tall from the same hybrid. All kinds of variation comes out, and of course the heat is all over the map too. Some are super hot, some are sweet, you know, some are not hot at all, and there's no way to tell until you taste them. So that's an adventure.
So and when you began this, how many years ago, how many years have you been doing this project?
Goodness, 3 or 4 years now, I think.
Okay. And yeah. Do you end up with more plants every year, or do you cull down?
No, I keep doing more and more, and every year I'm making, because at first I made just one hybrid, and then that was fun, so then I made two more, and then this year I'm making five or six more, and yeah, nothing ever gets smaller in my garden. I just, is more and more and more. It's a problem.
So are you like buying three neighbors' houses and knocking them down and using their backyards, or what are you doing?
I am really lucky. I actually live in an apartment and have no land of my own, but I have a friend who has about 5 acres that she doesn't use that she lets me play on. So that's really wonderful. And something I always say, if people love gardening and you don't have a place to garden, you can find a place. I've been in, you know, moved around and, you know, I just put it on Facebook, hey, I want to look for a place to garden, and got offers. So, yeah, so I have lots of space, and it's more like a farm than a garden, because it's not, you know, at my home, it's not pretty, it's just rows and rows of plants that I'm growing and playing with.
Oh, interesting. You know, Joseph, I don't know why I didn't know that. I didn't realize that this was at a different location. That's how dumb I am.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's an away location, which is a problem, because I'm not there at night, and so all the deers and woodchucks and everything have, you know, parties in the garden in my absence. But
now woodchucks go in their burrows at night, but everybody else, rabbits come out. And
right,
and
the rabbits, the deer.
Night shift is out, last night in my, out the bedroom window, which was open because it's been pretty hot, there was some blood-curdling screams, so I think somebody bit the dust last night in my... I think someone lost the fight last night in my garden. I don't know who it was. Yeah, it does get wild out there during the darkness.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've now taken the male parts from one and put it in the female parts from the other. We've made our hybrid, we've made our cross. Do we cover the flower? Do we do anything? Are we protecting it in any way? What happens next?
So what I usually do is I do all that when the flower is still in bud, so before the petals have actually opened, I'm actually ripping the flower open.
Okay.
That way I can get in there before the bees have, so the pollen I want is getting there first, and then I do pull off all the petals. And that's not 100%, but usually the bees are not going to be attracted to the flower if there's no, you know, the petals are there, you know, to attract. So that's not 100%, and I'm sure some bees do get in with errant pollen now and again, but I find if I pollinate in bud and then pull off the petals that I'm pretty safe to not, you know, that my pollen's there first and the bees aren't going to be attracted without the petals there.
So we go fast forward, we get some peppers, and and we'll talk about in a minute, like, what the heck you're going to do with all 280 plants worth of peppers. We can talk about that. but so you see ones that you really like, you taste them, some of them are really good, they have great attributes on the plant, and you want to save some seed on the best of the guys, right, of the plants.
Yeah.
What then what? So you save seed of peppers. How do you, like, what happens with that? When is that?
Yeah, so you want to harvest it from the peppers once they're ripe. So all peppers, you know, they're green when they're mature, and sometimes we eat them at that stage, but they're going to be yellow or orange or red when they're fully ripe. And then they're really easy. You know, tomatoes, the seeds are all suspended in slime. You have to go through a lot of effort to get them clean. But peppers is pretty much you cut them open, scrape the seeds out, and, you know, put them in your envelope. They don't need to be treated or anything.
Oh.
So it's easy to save seeds from them.
So you scrape them out. You put them on what, like a plate or a paper towel or?
Oh, I just put them in, you know, straight into a little, I buy like little coin envelopes. You can get it at the office supply store, little brown paper envelopes. Yeah. And I shove them in that, and then I store all my seeds go then into sealed plastic boxes in the refrigerator with a layer of silica gel, which is that comes in those little packets that say "do not eat" in the shoes when you buy them.
Yes,
which that sucks out the moisture out of the air, so it keeps them very dry. So seeds store best when they're cool and very, very dry. So I put them in sealed plastic boxes with the silica gel that keeps them very dry. They go in the refrigerator. My husband always says, I wonder what it would be like to have a bottom shelf to the refrigerator, because that's all given over to seed storage.
And you say forget it. Don't even think of that.
No. You knew that. You knew what you're getting into when you married me.
Right,
but,
exactly.
So how I store all my seeds.
You said you put them, so I've got this pepper. I split open the pepper. The pepper is fully ripe, as in not green if it's a, quote, bell pepper that I might want to eat it green. I let it go all the way to yellow or red first, right? Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And I do that, and then I scrape out the seeds, and do I dry them first before I put them in the little stationery store envelopes? Do I have to dry them first?
So I don't, because the silica gel is going to finish drying them out, which is one of the reasons I like to use it.
Okay.
If you were going to store them in, like, just in a glass jar or something, you want to make sure they're fully dry. But
okay.
I really like putting the silica gel in there because, you know, it's in a paper envelope, so the moisture, you know, it's not going to hold the moisture in there.
I see.
And then any residual moisture is going to get sucked out by having that silica gel in the box. So
that's
why I like that system, because I don't have to fuss over drying everything.
Okay.
Which often I'm harvesting seeds in August when nothing's dry here, or it's like 100% humidity.
Yes.
That's a losing game.
Yes.
So then just conceal them up in that, and they'll dry, you know, quickly in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And then we're going to, and then you've got them in these sealed boxes and in the fridge. Okay. So now let's go back to, do you invite everybody over for a pepper tasting or something? Like, what do you do with all these peppers?
Well, I need to figure out like a way to trick people to helping me taste them, because figuring out which ones are hot, what I end up doing is like figuring out which ones are hot or not, because of the genetics, about 3/4 of them are going to be hot and 1/4 of them are not. So I break open the pepper. I just touch my finger to the seeds, because that's where the heat is on the seeds themselves. And then I can touch my finger to my tongue.
Oh.
And I can do about 4 spots on my tongue before everything's just burning.
Oh.
So I just do a few at a time. Then once I figure out, you know, once I mark the plants, this one's, because, you know, this one's hot, this one's not, then I can just harvest them into big bins of hot peppers. And I try to sort them out to, like, really hot and sort of hot, though that's a little difficult to judge sometimes,
right.
And then not hot at all.
Okay.
And then, luckily, then I bring them home, and my husband, like, pickles them and makes a hot pepper jam last year, which
is
actually
excellent.
Really, really good. So we make lots of that, and then you can give it to people. It's nice, you know, fresh from the garden treat.
Right. You can drop it off at every neighbor's doorstep in the dark in the middle of the night for, like, a month. Because you've got 2,000 jars of it. Oh, my goodness.
Right, and they freeze really well.
Yes, they do.
And this year I want to try making, like, chili powder, drying them and grinding them, which I've never done.
A lot of my friends are doing that with a sort of, with the types that are appropriate for that, and they're loving it. I want to say they put them in the dehydrator, or they oven dry them on, like, 250 or something. Is that right? I don't remember.
That's what I've been seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to try that. Especially because when you dehydrate stuff, it makes it much smaller. So I think a lot of peppers could become a reasonable amount of chili powder that I could store somewhere.
So I want to make sure we spend the last, like, 3 minutes or so talking about that other thing I want you to confess to, those GLADs, Amid the peppers, we have how many kinds of, what are we doing with this gladiolus obsession?
So I love gladiolus a lot. And I started this, I've been breeding gladiolus for 5 or 6 years now, I think, maybe longer. I love gladiolus, but I'm a lazy gardener. I don't like digging stuff up, and I hate staking things.
Yeah.
So I've been breeding winter hardy gladiolus. So I plant them, they come through the winter just fine with shorter stems that don't have to be staked. So after this thunderstorm, I'm going out looking at all my seedlings and seeing which ones are still standing tall and which ones got smashed down in the mud by the storm. So I've been breeding, you know, winter hardy glads for a few years now. I really love them. They're such great tough plants, wonderful cut flowers, of course, and just, you know, fun to have in the garden.
But winter hardy, genius. That's brilliant. Oh, good. Because that is the drag.
Interestingly.
Yeah, that is
interestingly,
the drag.
Interestingly, Plantalite's Nursery in North Carolina has been selling some more hardy varieties for a few years now, just a few of them. Turns out a lot of the older varieties are actually quite winter hardy. And apparently back in the 40s or something, breeders selected against winter hardiness. They selected for ones that couldn't survive a winter because they wanted to force people to rebuy bulbs every year.
Right.
So the older germplasm, the older varieties are actually quite winter hardy. So going back to some of these more antique varieties, and then a variety actually found by an abandoned house up in northern Michigan, I've been able to breed ones that come through my winters just fine.
Oh, interesting.
After quite a few years now.
Oh, I love it. Okay. So how about just a little example of your crazy book, like these funny illustrations? Can you tell us like a vignette in your book? Like,
So I titled the book like The Complete Guide to Gardeners. So it's written
right to gardeners,
an explanation of how crazy gardeners are to normal people. So it's written for, like, you know, if you have a spouse or a parent or somebody in your life who doesn't get gardening, it's like an explanation of all the crazy things we do. And so it's like these silly illustrations, little cartoons. So like one, for example, is, you know, a picture of a deer and two people looking at it. The normal person is thinking, "Oh, Bambi," and the gardener is thinking, "Hosta eating machine," because we have very different relationships
Exactly.
So there's a whole section on like cute furry animals and how gardeners are not really into their cute furry animals the same way normal people are, or the way we, you know, plant shopping is not just shopping for plants; it's a whole production. It's an obsession of collecting all the plants. I have an explanation of the different types of gardeners. There's the collectors and the designers and the people who are just into one genus and the people who want food, all the different subspecies of gardeners. So it's just a silly sort of explanation, you know, exploration of all the crazy things that gardeners do.
Well, I know all your friends on Facebook love when you've been putting up illustrations over time. So it was a great idea to combine them into and augment them into this book. So I'm going to buy a couple copies to give away along with the transcript of the show. And Joseph, I am so glad to speak to you. And peppers, you got me thinking now. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
And have a great rest of the summer.
I will.
I'll talk to you again soon. And I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, hopefully, too. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.